Please be aware that this podcast has reference to drug and alcohol use and paraphernalia and may not be appropriate for some people in early recovery. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking professional help. The National Council on Problem Gambling provides the gambler and the family with support and resources and can be reached by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or 800-522-4700 or accessing its website, ncpgambling.org.
Well, today's podcast is going to be very interesting for a lot of people out there.
Looking forward to it.
Yes. Gambling disorder and problem gambling affects up to 15 million Americans. But one of the more important things that I think we were talking about is how surprising it was for both of us, the incidence in the youth.
In the young people.
In the youth. The number of people with gambling problems are ever increasing.
Yeah, and there's gambling and then there's gambling disorder. So gambling is defined as placing something of value at risk with the hope of gaining something of greater value. I kind of like that. I mean, it really encapsulates it. Mm-hmm. Less than 10% of adult gamblers develop a gambling problem. And according to the DSM-5, much like when we've discussed substance use disorders and alcohol use disorders, gambling disorder is defined as persistent and recurrent maladaptive gambling behavior. And we take 9 criteria, and out of that, you have to satisfy 4 or more. So the criteria are the highlights are that the person is frequently preoccupied with gambling. For example, preoccupied with living the past gambling experiences, planning the next venture, thinking of ways to get money with which to gamble, which is a very key piece of addiction or addiction medicine in which the person is going into that on that track of ways to get money. The need to gamble with increasing amounts of money in order to achieve the desired excitement, and we'll explore that further when we talk about the dopamine surge. They make repeated unsuccessful efforts to limit, cut back, or stop gambling, get restless or irritable when attempting to cut down or stop gambling, and they often use gambling as a way of escaping from problems or relieving mood issues like helplessness, guilt, anxiety, or depression. And after gambling and losing money, they often gamble another day to get even, which is called chasing after one's losses. Lying to family members, therapists, or others to conceal the extent of the gambling. Jeopardizing or losing a significant relationship with like a spouse or a job or educational or career opportunity because of gambling. And then relying on others to provide money to relieve a desperate financial situation caused by gambling. And in order to illustrate what is called the gambler's fallacy, there's an incident, a very famous one, in 1913 at the Monte Carlo Casino. A roulette wheel landed on black 26 times in a row. So the gamblers believed red was due. And they bet millions against black only to lose repeatedly. So it's a textbook example of the gambler's fallacy and the mistaken belief that past outcomes influence future independent events.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's interesting because I remember, I forgot where it was, but they were showing that the addictive property of the uncertainty.
Yes. And the high from
yes.
the, yes, a mixture of fear and anticipation.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And as with other addictions, there are levels of gambling as well. A low-risk gambler is someone who has gambled but never lost more than $100 in a single day or year. And I know many people out there saying, well, I guess I'm not a gambler. I don't lose that much money. Then there are those who lose more than $100 in a single day, but they do not have the list of
the criteria
that you said earlier. Then we have the at-risk gambler, someone who has lost more than $100 in a single day and reported one or two of the DSM criteria. And I guess, you know, if you think about those who go on a cruise ship and they gamble, be careful. And then we have the problem gambler, someone who has lost more than $100 in a single day and reported three or four of the DSM criteria for gambling.
It's really reflective as we look into this about how the problem has become a problem because of growth in the gambling industry and how that is causing an increase in the prevalence of gambling problems. In 1991, this is very interesting, 80% of the United States population gambled, compared with only 61% in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And in 1978, only two states had legalized gambling, but in 1998, only two states had not legalized gambling.
Incredible.
Yeah. And an estimated 2.5 million adults are pathologic gamblers. 3 million adults are problem gamblers. Men are likely to be pathologic, problem, and at-risk gamblers than women. And this is a very interesting thing which you've talked about before, the availability of a casino within mm-hmm. 50 miles mm-hmm. compared to 50 to 250 miles is associated with approximately double the prevalence mm-hmm. of problem and pathologic gamblers. And that's why, like you said, you opposed the opening of the casino.
I did.
And yeah, no one listened.
Yeah.
And lotteries and casinos are now the most common forms of gambling. And of course, there is now social media and internet gambling, which is at your fingertips.
Which is just awful.
It's very awful.
But nobody wants our opinion. But we're going to share it anyway. Because the economics of gambling are staggering. The amount of money waged annually in the United States is estimated to be 0.5 trillion. I don't know how many zeros that is. I was thinking of a patient of mine, and he was I would put him as an at-risk gambler. But he came in one day and he said to me, "Hey, Doc, guess what? I won $100,000, you know, in one of his scratch-offs." I said, "Oh, that's very nice." I was so happy for him. But then I found out that he was gambling at least $30 to $40 a day. I mean, a day. A day. Okay? So Americans spend approximately $31.5 billion. Now, that's billion with a B.
Yeah.
Annually on state lottery games alone. Pathologic gamblers and others with gambling problems are more likely, however, listen to this, are people who are on welfare, on assistance, have declared bankruptcy, and have been arrested or incarcerated, people who are less able to incur such debt.
Yes, yes.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
They're more likely to have
issues. But it's the vicious circle, right?
Correct.
That it's causing the bankruptcy.
Correct. And they're also more likely to have issues in being unable to access treatment, having problems with gambling and cannot get treatment from insurance companies.
Another piece that we were both very surprised at, I remember, when we were looking into putting this together, was how common gambling is among adolescents. Mm-hmm. In a 1998 survey of 21,300 8th through 12th grade students in public and private schools in Vermont, 53%. Now, imagine this is in 1998. How mm-hmm. much worse it must be now.
Right, right.
53% reported gambling in the past 12 months, and 7% reported problems attributable to gambling.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's just as time goes on, it becomes kind of like exponential because of the internet gambling. And mm-hmm. senior citizens may also have an increased risk. And in one survey of attendees at a senior center in the U.S., approximately 10% were problem or pathologic gamblers. Hmm. Then there's the gender issue. The prevalence of pathologic and problem gambling in men is 2 to 3 times higher than in women, but the progression of the disorder is faster in women. And women who entered an outpatient treatment for gambling problems were found more often to be single than their male counterparts. Mm-hmm. The issue or the problem gambling or high-risk groups are also adults in mental health treatment, people who use nicotine, alcohol, marijuana, inhalants, illegal steroids, so basically substance use. African American, positive family history. This is an interesting piece, that this is very prevalent in addiction, that there is a family history mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. And childhood abuse and child neglect. So also what we call now adverse childhood experiences, mm-hmm. lower socioeconomic status, which is, like you were just mentioning, so kind of paradoxic and sad. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And witnessing trauma or being a victim of a physical attack, carrying a weapon. And this I found really cute. Mm-hmm. Seatbelt non-use.
Wow.
It's like, okay.
Yeah. How did they even come up with that identifier to put on the survey, you know?
Yeah, it's
do
really
you
very
a seatbelt?
Yeah. And this kind of like in all of the high-risk groups and to illustrate the highs and the lows of gambling mm-hmm. is a incident of Archie Karras, in the 1990s, a Greek-American, a gambler who turned $50 into over $40 million
wow.
in Vegas. And it's known as the run. And that's where that phrase comes from. And this streak is considered to be one of the most remarkable in gambling history.
Wow.
He won at poker, pool, and dice, and and this is the cycle. His luck eventually turned and he lost it all, and he remains the symbol of the highs and the lows of gambling.
Wow. Wow. Imagine that. You know, you get to a certain point, you would think you would cash in and go home. But no.
Mm-hmm.
One more.
Exactly. And they typically, I think 98% of the time, they lose it all.
Yeah. Isn't that sad?
What they gain. Exactly.
Very sad. So we're going to look at a little bit about what's happening in the brain. What is going on? We're finding that they're looking at gambling as one of the natural addictions, such as sexual addiction, overeating, which may involve the release, again, of endogenous opioids, the enkephalins. And when we talk about addictions, we're always coming back to the same endorphins, to the same dopamine system. In addition, problem gamblers seem to exhibit more activation of the hypothalamic pituitary. That's complicated, but it activates the whole system mm-hmm. when they are gambling. It's excitatory, as well as changes in the brain reward pathway. The more you do this, the more you get out of it. The more you do this, the more you get out of it. And when something bad happens, well, now you have to recoup what you've lost to get what you lost, and then you gain, and then it's a run like that commercial we talked about several sessions ago. There was a commercial on TV about cocaine. I do cocaine so I can work harder, so I can do more coke, so I can work harder, so I can do more coke, and then so on and so on and so on. I love that commercial. In the brain also, we have this dysregulation of the dopaminergic tone, and it plays a role in keeping the person engaged in this behavior. Pathologic gambling has also been reported in patients with restless leg syndrome who are taking dopaminergic agonists. So there's a product for Parkinson's, Pramipexole, I'm always tongue-tied with that one. Because it increases the dopamine, it can also trigger some of that behavior. And not unexpectedly, twin studies have shown that there is a genetic component to this behavior.
So when we get to the point that there could be an issue, how do we screen? Mm-hmm. So we have what is called the South Oaks Gambling Screen called SOGS. It's the only extensively used, and it's a validated screening tool. Mm-hmm. It is a 20-item scale that includes weighted items to determine if the patient is hiding evidence of gambling, spending more time or money gambling, arguing with family members over gambling, and borrowing money from a variety of sources. And so the next one is the Gamblers Anonymous Survey. But this is not validated. It includes a 20-question survey. It can be helpful in gathering clinical information, and it can help lead the patient to the Gamblers Anonymous program. 7 positive responses to the survey questions suggest the diagnosis of pathologic gambling. And then a similar survey, Are You Living with a Compulsive Gambler, can also be used to assist family members in coping with a problem gambler. But the best screening method and the easiest one for a primary care doc or perhaps anyone mm-hmm. is based on the CAGE questionnaire. The CAGE questionnaire was used in the past for alcoholism, and C stood for cut down, A stood for do you feel angry if you're criticized for drinking, G stands for do you feel guilty that you drink, mm-hmm. and E stood for an eye-opener. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I use this all the time in the office, and it is so user-friendly, and it is so remarkably helpful. Mm-hmm. So based on this, they created the Lie, Bet, questionnaire for a gambling disorder, mm-hmm. which is basically, and the tool has been validated, which is just so wonderful. So two questions and you're basically done. Have you ever had to lie to people important to you about how much you gambled? Mm-hmm. Have you ever felt a need to bet more money? Mm-hmm. And a yes answer to either question suggests the need to investigate for the presence of additional criteria for problem or pathologic gambling. So basically, you do the lie bet questionnaire, and then you can go back to the SOGS mm-hmm. or the Gamblers Anonymous survey. So it really kind of like makes life very easy for us to pick up.
For us to pick up, but the recipient, the person who is doing this testing on themselves are probably thinking, oh my gosh, I think I have a problem. I think I need help, but
which
nah.
Which is fine. Exactly, right? Exactly, but nah.
But nah.
I don't want to do it.
But yeah. I think our savvy listeners can pick up on the similarity between the various addictions. The more we talk about
exactly.
this, it's very, very similar. Mm-hmm. Incorporating the same pathways in the brain.
Yeah.
I think they're seeing the connection and they're hearing
the pathways as well as the criteria.
The criteria
are the same.
Very much the same.
Very much the same.
It tells you what's happening in the brain. So are there some psychiatric disorders that are found within some of these issues with gambling? Yes, we have found that just about any of the psychiatric illnesses can be comorbid that is occurring simultaneously with gambling disorders. You can have depression, bipolar disorder. You can have psychosis, anxiety, personality disorders, any kind of psychiatric disorders. And they've also found that years ago, I visited Atlantic City when I was younger, but that was not for the gambling, but reading about the fact that they have a higher rate of visitors and residents having more issues with suicide since the casinos opened in Atlantic City. It's very sad, but again, people will dismiss it as not really relevant because they want to gamble. The relationship between gambling and alcohol use was investigated in a study and found that 12.9% of heavy drinkers had one or more gambling-related problems. So there is this comorbidity. And the patterns of gambling are different for individuals with substance use disorder compared to those who are not substance use have substance use disorders. In a younger age of onset of gambling was more likely to have been associated with more gambling issues. So there is this relationship. And if you have one or both, or you need to really consider, I should do something about it. But again, like we've said before, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Yes, only one, but the light bulb has to want to change. So this is where we talk about treatment that's available. If you wanted, there are many resources in the community. Psychotherapy, which is our gold standard, cognitive behavioral therapy, it is so useful in so many disorders. This would also help if you want the treatment. It helps you overcome irrational thoughts because there's this thing that you can change, you can control events, you can use these superstitions to gamble on making more money. That the cognitive behavioral therapy help you change the way you think about some of these behaviors. Psychological therapy, stress identification of reasons for gambling, confronting your defenses, and then working on cessation of the chasing behaviors. That chasing is so powerful because
yes.
it's almost like the next high. For those, I remember years ago with cocaine, they used to talk about chasing it, that you always want that first
chasing
high.
Chasing the high.
Chasing the high.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So chasing the dragon in
yes.
opioids.
Yes, yes. So cognitive treatment focuses on challenging and connecting the patient's errors in thinking, for example, in exploring why I think the way I think, and this is an illusion, how can I fight back? So those are available with treatment. Useful intervention that can assist the patient include enlisting the family in helping, although that can also cause conflict within the family. Treating the patient for comorbid conditions such as depression and anxiety, it helps mitigate and reduce some of the other behaviors. Providing the gambler and family members with support resources, like the numbers you give at the beginning, 1-800-GAMBLERS or GAMANON. Al-Anon is very, very helpful in the alcoholic community. Very helpful. I have had many people who found support in attending it. They also have it for gamblers. They also provide information about counselors and people that can not only work with the individuals who have the gambling addiction, but with the family system as well. So treatment goals, the goal is to avoid and change your pattern of behavior. They're thinking that perhaps some people can maybe gamble some and not know. I really am one of those purists who believe that abstinence should be our goal, because mm-hmm. once you start, you go down that path. Gamblers Anonymous is modeled after AA, and they use the 12-step program, and there are some people who are not into the what they call the God thing. However, your source of higher power can be whatever you choose it to be. You know, but it really is a good program. The effectiveness of Gamblers Anonymous has not been demonstrated, but many people find it beneficial if the light bulb wants to change.
Wants to change. And, you know, speaking of Atlantic City and the higher power, so people talk about, I've only been to Vegas once, and they always ask very animatedly that, did you love it? And I was like, no. I kind of like disliked it a lot, because in Islam, gambling is forbidden. We call it haram, as is alcohol. And what is Vegas but gambling
alcohol.
And
but,
so
but you
going
know what,
through,
there's so much in Las Vegas to do. I mean, when you go see the Grand Canyon, the Red Rocks, there's so much.
So
to
we
do.
Did that.
Yeah,
we did that.
So much to
and
do
the
there.
Shows. Mm,
and
you
the
know,
shows.
You do the shows.
Yes.
But the main thing there,
yeah.
as you know,
as I know,
and you know, and the way that hotels are structured,
yes.
if you've been,
yes.
you when you enter, you have no choice but to go through
the gauntlet,
the casino,
the gauntlet.
Okay. So I'm kind of like on autopilot, because it doesn't make any difference to me, because I would not, like you said, that in gambling, it is really, really, I don't agree that you can do just a little bit. Because if a person has an addictive sort of dependence or inclination, rather, towards becoming mm-hmm. a problem gambler, mm-hmm. then a little bit is going to become a lot of bit.
It's not going to satisfy.
So for me, I was kind of like, you know, on autopilot, because I'm just kind of like walking through. I'm not going to even try because I'm not going to try, because I'm not going to do it. And I'm not going to drink. So I'm just kind of like watching. And it's very interesting to watch people who are compromised, who are drunk and in a state of like losing their lifetime earnings.
I'm glad you said that. I had an example I wanted to share that I almost forgot. I was on a cruise ship, and I remember, and I'm one of those people, they have a name for us, where you just take X number of chips and you just nursed all of that night for that one little stack of chips. I just, one at a time. There was this gentleman sitting next to me playing large stacks of chips, and I'm looking at him thinking, oh, this is not good. And I clearly saw that he was intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I said to the table person, I said, well, shouldn't you be like helping him to not, because I don't think that's right to take his money. You can see that he's intoxicated. So I'm saying all this to him, and he's looking at me as if, you know, like, I said, but.
Oh, you said it out loud?
I did. No, I talked to the table person. I said, you should stop him because he is wasting money. So he said, well, you know, we've been trying to help, but he just, you know. So at one point he lost the whole stack of chips that he had. This man got up, went to his stateroom, came back with a wad of money. And I'm still playing one chip at a time, and I'm watching him thinking.
And that's why they're connected, the alcohol and
the
substance use with the gambling.
It's just.
And so in terms of treatment, you know, we also have, like you talked very extensively about all of the psychotherapy and support that we have for gambling, which is the primary thrust of treatment. But we do have a little pharmacotherapy to help, or medications to help. Originally, it was thought that medications just helped the comorbid condition that you spoke about, mm-hmm. like bipolar disorder, OCD, ADHD, substance use disorder. But initial research showed that medications would just help the particular psychiatric condition. But over the past decade, we've noticed that what we call SSRIs, or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, have been found to be effective in reducing gambling behavior. So they are, some of the names are fluvoxamine, sertraline or Zoloft, citalopram or Celexa, and fluoxetine or Prozac. And I think both of us would agree that medication, particularly for the really compromised gambler, medication in combination with psychotherapy would be have a much higher effectiveness than psychotherapy alone.
Absolutely.
And Wellbutrin or bupropion is an excellent medication, and that has been shown in some trials to be beneficial. And then the naltrexone is a great medication because it's an opioid antagonist, and that has, there's limited evidence, but that has shown some help. And a randomized double-blind trial of nalmefene, which is not available in the United States except for research, has been shown to reduce gambling scores significantly over a 16-week trial period compared with placebo. So in people who have bipolar disorder, lithium can be of benefit, and in others, a topiramate or topamax can be beneficial. So we have a plethora of medications, but the key piece, like I always say, is we have to tailor the treatment to the patient.
Exactly.
So that's really a very important thing.
And a public health approach that can be of assistance is to reduce the availability of gambling locations and lottery venues. I mean, we can
make money. We get taxes. Oh gosh, economy.
I mean, ban advertising for gambling activities anymore. I forget the actor's name. I always see him pop up in commercials for sport gambling. I mean, it makes it so easy. Keep lottery tickets out of sight. Enforce the legal age of gambling for gambling. Ban certain things, certain games. Decrease the number of video lottery terminals. Consider a moratorium on building new casinos. I mean, there are so many things we can do as a community to help one another. But again, not only does the individual have to seek because they want, but the community also has to want to make the change.
We have a responsibility towards our community, for sure.
We do, and we can. We have so many ways we can help. You know,
instead of just going with capitalism and the money, it destroys so many lives.
So many.
Yeah. So we really hope you enjoyed this episode. Our next episode will deal with social media addiction, and we are very excited to present that. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Demos.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Do share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that drug use and behavioral addictions like gambling disorder and social media addiction, that the damage that they cause. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. And with all the challenges of life, do remember patience in difficult times and gratitude always. We hope to see you soon.
WGTE, voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.